again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the journal that brings you Memphis stories, ideas, connections, and community in one place. And I am Mark Fleischer, publisher of Storyboard Memphis, and your host for the next 30 or so minutes of Storyboard 30. Before introducing my guest today, I'm going to read a passage that goes like this. Standing in Overton Park's old forest on an early morning, it is easy to imagine a time 100 years ago when much of the country surrounding Memphis was covered in hardwoods, muscadine vines, saplings, and underbrush. It is said that just 200 years ago, the forest was so dense and seemingly unending that a squirrel could travel from the Mississippi River to the Atlantic Ocean without ever touching the ground. I love that passage. So of course, we're talking about Overton Park. My guest today is Tina Sullivan. Tina is the executive director of the Overton Park Conservancy. Tina, welcome to Storyboard 30.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
I love that passage, and I love it kind of frames our discussion real nicely because, after all, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and there's so much nostalgia associated with the park and so much romance associated with the park. And I feel like it's something we all kind of need right now, right? So of course that passage is from Overton Park by Willie Bearden, our friend Willie Bearden. And so anyway, I think it speaks to what we're kind of feeling right now. So Tina, thank you for being on the show once again. And let's first of all talk about, for listeners who, you know, aren't so aware of what the Conservancy does, you know, that the park has many stakeholders. You know, of course, we have the Shell, the Levitt Shell, we have the Brooks Museum, we have the, you know, kind of once and former Memphis College of Art. We have the city of Memphis, the maintenance area, and of course, we have the zoo, you know. So for listeners out there, talk for a minute about the role of the Conservancy in all this.
Well, that's a good question. So when the Conservancy was first established in 2012, our role was simply to figure out how to improve the park, the public areas of the park that people were using every day, the playgrounds, the trails, the greensward, the formal gardens. And we immediately added to our board of directors representatives from each of our park partners. So there are, as you said, there are six of us managing real estate in the park. Side by side. So the Conservancy's role evolved a bit to be, I'd say, a convener to help people who are visiting the park think about the park holistically and to facilitate neighborliness between those of us who are managing real estate. So we're starting to look at things like, how do we work together to improve access to our respective properties? How do we collaborate on issues around security and maintenance? You know, we have each other's phone numbers on speed dial, so whenever there is an issue, how do we get communications out quickly to the people that need them? So it's become a bit more of a role of convener and in addition to steward and advocate on the behalf of the park itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the role as convener, things have obviously changed over the last couple of months with the pandemic. Have you all had a chance to meet and talk about, and I can't even imagine what you all would be talking about, being that there's, you know, the park has essentially been shut down to vehicular traffic, right? And then for a while they're shut down, was closed altogether. What have the discussions been like with with the stakeholders?
Well, actually, the park never did shut down completely. Some of the facilities within the park have closed. So the Brooks Museum is still currently closed. The zoo was closed for a period, but is now reopened at a limited capacity. And certain amenities within the public areas of the park remain closed. So you can't really use the playgrounds, the dog park, or the restrooms, and we're not renting out pavilions. So the rest of the park remained open throughout, even though it was closed to vehicular traffic. And that was mainly to keep the crowds at bay. We did have communication with our partners throughout we have continued to have communications throughout the pandemic. A lot of it is to navigate how are we going to close the park to vehicular access but still allow employees to get in and out. What are the problems we're facing with that? Most recently, the park was tagged with graffiti, so we're all working together to file reports and figure out if there could be any economy and savings and working together to get that removed. So yes, the work that we've done, that we can, it's just all continued. It's taken on a different focus, perhaps, but we're still in close communication with our partners. We're still doing daily maintenance. Our janitorial crew is still picking up litter. Our grounds crew is still mowing the grass. So in some ways, we're still working as much as we ever were.
I visited the park a few times, walking into the Memphis College of Art a couple times. They've still had a couple of sales, as they've shut down. But also, my wife and I picnicked in the Greensward a couple weeks ago, gorgeous spring day. The park's never looked more beautiful. Talking about the Greensward, I'll definitely like to talk about that subject, but it was wonderful to sit in the middle of the Greensward and look around and not see any automobiles, right? Especially parked automobiles, for zoo patrons. So I want to ask you about, obviously we have, again, this is so much of this conversation that we're having is framed pre-pandemic because of so many of the unknowns we're facing right now. But going back a year or so ago, we obviously have some new zoos leadership in Jim Dean. And talk about, if you would, kind of on a gut level, how did you receive the news that the new intention under Jim Dean and the zoo was to avoid using any of the Greensward for parking?
Well, it was such welcome news and not surprising having gotten to know Jim Dean. I think he called me on his first or second day on the job, and I invited him to take a tour with me and a couple of my team members, and he spent several hours walking around the park and walking around the old forest with us and said, this place is beautiful. This is the zoo's front yard. We're committed to helping you be good stewards of the park. And so it's not surprising at all that he announced that he would do whatever he could to minimize the zoo's impact, any negative impact on the park. And he has consistently been that kind of neighbor. We have a great relationship. Our teams work well together. They always have, but it's just a wonderful, fresh investment, I would say, into the relationship.
Yeah. I had, as I mentioned before we started recording, I had Jim on my show a couple months ago, and just really refreshing conversation to have. I feel like, the zoo is definitely in great hands going forward. Mm-hmm. We should point out too that, Jim Dean representing the zoo is on the Overton Park Conservancy Board as a non-voting board member, including the rest of your stakeholders, right? The MCA, the Brooks, the city, and the Shell.
Yes, that's correct.
So going forward, again, this conversation being so much framed around the, pre-pandemic thoughts, what are some of the plans that you all had going forward, as it relates to the other stakeholders? In other words, we have some vacancies coming up. We have the changes in the zoo leadership. What are some of the conversations that you all were having pre-pandemic about the future of the park as it relates to your other stakeholders?
Well, we've been talking about master planning for so long now, and we've made some progress with it. But if I could just get a moment without a crisis or without an announcement of a disruptive change, that would be great so we could finish this plan. But yes, we started talking about master planning, and then we had protests around the Greensward parking that just dragged on for so long. We resumed planning, and we then had announcements that Memphis College of Art was closing and Brooks Museum would be moving. So we paused again. We were just getting ready to start planning again, and the pandemic hit. So I would like a moment. Would everybody just please take a moment and let us finish the plan? But the plan we'll look at, originally, the plan, of course, was going to look at all of the public areas in the park. So how can we improve access into the park and through the park, especially for pedestrians, cyclists, and people in wheelchairs? You mentioned the southeast corner where the city had a kind of a maintenance function for many decades. We know the city's committed to moving out, and so we need to come up with a plan for that. We've had conversations about the golf course, and then now, of course, conversations about the future of Rust Hall and Brooks Museum. Not knowing yet who our tenants are going to be in those buildings, we need to know who our neighbors are going to be so that we can all plan together. Because where we need to go with the future here is a seamless visitor experience where all of the amenities seem to flow into each other and work well together and make logical sense in planning for our respective spaces. So the future, what I hope is not only will it look physically a little bit more connected and easier to access all around, it'll have an identity of one cohesive park experience where you might spend a whole day or come in from out of town and spend a whole weekend, stay at their new hotel in Overton Square and spend 2 days just exploring all of the Overton Park amenities. So that's what I envision the future looking like.
Yeah. Can you talk about any of the specifics of some of what the master planning revealed or?
Well, we're not far enough into it really to talk about specifics. I will say that in our initial round of community engagement, we know that people don't really draw distinctions when they move from space to space. And so they don't think, I'm going to go to the zoo and then I'm going to go to Overton Park. They think I'm going to go in this general direction. I'm going to see some animals. I'm going to walk in the forest, you know, and maybe I'm going to go to a festival at Brooks Museum while I'm there. People like that cohesive experience. They definitely talk about access. So it is, unless you live in the Evergreen neighborhood, it's difficult to access the park. You have to cross some busy streets. Even if you live in the Evergreen neighborhood, you have to navigate McLean. So it can be difficult to get there, especially if you're coming in from outside of Midtown. So we know we need to improve access and make the park feel more welcoming, which obviously means making sure that we've provided parking for everyone, or at least a reasonable amount of parking for the uses that would come in. The big opportunity really is in what to do with that southeast corner. So there is a historic Works Progress Administration building that could be reused in some exciting way. There are some really interesting greenhouses that are still in use. So there's some potential for showcasing those, and then just, you know, returning 13 acres of land in the center of the city back to public usage is exciting. So figuring out what to do with that, people are pretty excited. They want to see, you know, expanded food and beverage options, more places to just sit and congregate, which, you know, is going to probably feel even more important after we come out of this pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and, you know, another thing I was just thinking about and remembering is the fact that we have some, you know, some rather large housing developments going up, you know, just east of the park along Sam Cooper, for example, and then other various developments. You know, you get a new apartment building that is scheduled to be constructed on Poplar right there across the street. You know, so, you know, park maintenance is going to, you know, I would imagine it's going to be on the increase, and then returning some of these spaces to the public or for public use is going to be even more important, because you're going to have a lot more park visitors, park neighbors, right, in the next, coming up here in the next few years.
So yes, we're growing in density. That's the focus of the Memphis 3.0 plan, is to invest in the core of the city and invest in the growing density in neighborhoods. And as the city becomes more dense, it'll be critically important to maintain our green space, because you're going to have more people kind of stacked on top of each other without their own backyards to take refuge. So it's going to be important to preserve the green space that we do have. And so obviously a rare opportunity to reclaim green space, that just doesn't happen without major development. So it's a relatively easy way to bring online some new green amenities for the core city.
Yeah, yeah. Now we should, you know, we should remind listeners too that it costs money for all these things, and you know, Overton Park is not a for-profit paid admission amenity. Right. It's a nonprofit, and you know, and it costs, you know, the estimates are roughly about $1 million a year to maintain the park. Yeah. What effect has the pandemic had on your revenue stream, if any, at this point? I mean, you know, for some nonprofits, it has not changed at this point, but has the pandemic had any effects on any of the revenue streams?
Absolutely. So first of all, the park is open and free to the public 365 days of the year. You don't have to pay to visit Overton Park ever. That said, we do have spaces that are available for rent. So we have the historic pavilion in the East Parkway picnic area. It's over 100 years old. It's extremely popular for our family reunions and church picnics and 5K, small nonprofits hosting 5K races. So we began canceling and refunding our event fees back in March, and we have canceled everything, I believe, through July at this point. So several months worth of rental revenue. It's a relatively small portion of our budget, but it's over the course of the year, it is definitely going to be a hit. And we anticipate a hit to our general fundraising. So in addition to that earned revenue through the rental program, we get 15% of our budget from the city of Memphis. They give us an annual operations allocation of about $150,000. The rest we raise through private sources. So as this pandemic continues to affect the economy, we anticipate having fewer donors between now and the end of the year. And it is possible that some of our major donors will have taken a significant financial hit on their investments. And so we anticipate that our donations are going to drop off a bit, which impacts our ability to, you know, maintain a high quality free public park. So it is going to be difficult to try to find out how to replace that lost revenue.
Have you all been able to take advantage of any of the CARES Act programs that provide, you know, either through paycheck protection or others? Have you been able to take advantage of any of those?
Yes, we did receive paycheck protection funding for the 2 months of salaries. And so that was, I anticipate that will be forgiven, that it'll be a grant rather than a loan, because we'll have met all of the eligibility requirements, of course. We moved out of our office because it was in a retirement community, and they were able to, you know, give us some consideration on the rent, since we're not actually taking advantage of the space. So we have been able to achieve some savings also just, you know, literally closing the restrooms. We buy a lot of toilet paper, Mark, so we have a little bit of savings there, but honestly, not really enough to cover some of the other costs that we may have incurred responding to the pandemic. So
yeah,
things like, you know, how to put up proper signage to tell people, you know, what is and isn't available to them, you know, how to redirect our contractors to new tasks. And then, you know, trying to figure out how to take advantage of this quiet period to get some projects done that needed to be done, but maybe weren't necessarily ideal during our peak season.
Yeah. You have been executive director for how long?
I believe, well, since 2012, so 8 years.
Tell me about your experience signing on as executive director, and also I obviously have a question about just how you feel about the park in general. So when you signed on as executive director, tell me about that experience.
Well, I had a personal goal of working for a conservation organization many years ago, and I had made the decision that I wanted to work in nonprofit. So I actually moved back to Memphis to work for my other favorite park, Shelby Farms Park, and I was a fundraiser for Shelby Farms Park for a while. I had, after leaving Shelby Farms Park, I had begun volunteering for the group that was working on the conservancy effort. So they did some initial surveys of the public. It was called the Speak Up Survey, to see if there was an appetite for conservancy around Overton Park. And I also did some volunteering around building up a grants database, so to help the conservancy take advantage of any potential funding that was out there. Overton Park had been my neighborhood park for, you know, in any of my adult life when I was living in Memphis. I was always within an easy distance of Overton Park, so I felt very connected to it. I wasn't really even considering applying for the job, but after getting, I met George Cates, our founding board member, and it kind of became an irresistible proposition after that, because it was a park I loved, in a field that I wanted to be in, and it just seemed like a great fit, and it has been. It certainly didn't go in the direction that I anticipated it going. I didn't know that I would become an expert on parking, or now an expert on public health. You know, planning, there were things that I knew I would do. So master planning was expected, and fundraising, of course, was expected, but
yeah,
crisis management was definitely not on my radar.
You know, I have talked to many leaders around town who have either been in their position for a couple of years or maybe even just a year. And, you know, they look back and they think, I had no idea I was going to be faced with all of these things, you know. No one does, of course, but
right.
Yeah. Thinking back, or going back to the quote from the passage from Willie Bearden's book on Overton Park, you know, there's, again, such a romance and associated with the park. And also, it's just such a serene setting. And for those who either haven't spent much time in the park, you know, it really is a rarity among city parks, because the old forest, you walk through the old forest, the passage talks about, you know, you can imagine it being 100 years ago. It still feels like that. So my point in saying all this is that, you know, you think about a conservancy, how can we not have a conservancy when it comes to Overton Park? It's such a jewel, one of our most important assets as a city.
Well, you mentioned the Old Forest is absolutely the most important asset in Overton Park. It is so rare. It's one of only three old growth forests in urban areas in the United States. And it's the only old growth forest in an urban area in the Southeast United States. And so when you go back to that Willie Bearden quote and you think about how lush and green this landscape was before humans started moving in, think about what we've lost. Think about the connection to nature that we all have lost by making the decision to live in an urban environment. And think about all the Memphians who may not really have access to a wild natural environment anywhere else in their life. So they can, through an easy 20-minute drive or maybe a quite a bit longer bus ride, they can get to Overton Park and they can experience nature in Overton Park, where they may not be able to get to any of Tennessee's other state natural areas. So it is a rare gem. It's a place of refuge and solace and now connection, because there has, as you've described, people feel connected to it. And so there is this general movement towards long-term stewardship of the old forest. We're recognizing that without intervention, we won't have the forest. It would be a big kudzu patch and a privet patch. And if we didn't have a conservancy actively managing it, we have a forester on staff who who's researching how to make sure that we can steward this place for over the next 100 years. So you're right. Without the Conservancy, we would have Overton Park. It would still be managed by the City of Memphis. We would probably end up without a forest over the course of the next X number of years, being a relatively short duration.
You're right. I mean, it could be completely overrun. You know, having access to the park is so important for every citizen of Memphis. And, you know, during the pandemic shutdown, you know, we have been, you know, kind of blessed to have the park for those of us who could just walk in, you know, blessed to have the park to ourselves, you know, in a way, you know, absent any vehicles. But having that kind of access is so important to the park itself and also to the citizens of Memphis and, you know, being able to go in and out. In the master plan, you've talked about access. How important do you think that continues to be?
I think it'll continue to come up in our planning conversations. It always does. You know, I envision a future Memphis where we are all less reliant on personal vehicles. That would be wonderful. That will be wonderful when that happens. But we're not quite there yet. And right now, it becomes an equity issue. And when we were talking about the forest and Willie Dearden's quote, and we talked about the nostalgia for Overton Park, we can't forget that for a very long time, there was a large segment of the population that was excluded from enjoying Overton Park. And so not only do we need to make sure that we're including everyone, we need to make sure that we are welcoming, that we are undoing maybe those years where people felt excluded. And some of that feeling of exclusion lingers in our culture today, where people don't necessarily feel like this is their park, or that these amenities in the park are their amenities, even as Memphis citizens. And so whatever we do with the master plan, we absolutely must hold in front of us this belief that all of it points towards being welcoming and inclusive and providing free and open access to every Memphian. That is as important as any of the physical spaces or physical changes that we make to the park.
Absolutely. You know, it's not that long ago where this, you know, where we had this kind of exclusion. Before we wrap up, I have to mention that next year is a rather landmark year in terms of anniversaries, a landmark year for Overton Park. Next year will be the 50-year anniversary of the decision, Citizens to Preserve Overton Park versus Volpe, which for those of you listeners less familiar, that was the decision that basically stopped the Interstate 40 from being paved through the park itself. I would imagine you all are looking forward to next year.
Yes, we have some plans in the works to celebrate that decision, to celebrate the activists who led us to that point in time, and to celebrate the people who helped them get there. So Charlie Newman was a young lawyer at the time, and he is still practicing law and still providing legal services to Overton Park. So we'll certainly be giving Charlie a big shout out. I should probably not say that because I don't want to reveal any secrets, but we're planning to celebrate in an appropriate Memphis way, which may be changing in our new post-pandemic reality, but not that we're post-pandemic yet, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But we also want to celebrate the continuing culture of stewardship and advocacy that Overton Park enjoys and that Overton Park inspires in current generations. And we want to set a course that we continue to be that place that inspires the next generation to feel a sense of stewardship and a sense of advocacy for their public places and for their special, unique assets that make you connected to your home. So that's kind of what we hope to achieve. That's a big, lofty, vague goal, but that's the direction we're going right now with our planning.
No, it's a terrific goal, you know, and, you know, again, the park is so important to all of us. You know, if you talk to any Memphian, they'll say that they something they can't live without. Right. Tina Sullivan, Executive Director of the Overton Park Conservancy. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Mark, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for letting me ramble on about my favorite and beloved park.
You've been listening to Storyboard 30, and this is your host, Mark Fleischer. Thanks again to WIPL and the Memphis Public Libraries for their support, to producer Vance Durbin, and to WIPL broadcast manager Tommy Warren, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. Memphis, make it a great week, and stay safe out there.